Coming up on KUCB News, prospective candidates can file for Unalaska's fall election. And tonight, the City Council will continue its debate over public safety. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, July 24th, 2018. Unalaskans can now file to run for local office. The candidacy period has opened for three seats that'll be on the municipal ballot come October. The two city council spots are currently held by Alejandro Bongtungle and Sherry Coleman, while the school board post belongs to Tammy Fowler Pound, who serves as president. As of yesterday, no one had declared candidacy for any of the seats, which come with three-year terms. Prospective candidates must file at City Hall by August 16th, and Unalaskans must register to vote by September 2nd, a month before the polls open. You can register to vote in person at City Hall or online at voterregistration.alaska.gov. The Unalaska City Council meets tonight. At the regular session, councilors are scheduled to hold their first reading of an ordinance that would ban local retailers from distributing plastic grocery bags. They'll also discuss options for reorganizing the Department of Public Safety and receive an update on the ongoing renovations to the city dock. The City Council meets tonight at 6 o'clock at City Hall. KUCB will also broadcast the meeting live, so you can listen in right here on 89.7 FM. City officials say the final results of Saturday's Ballyhoo Mountain Run have just been confirmed. That means we will bring you the full story tomorrow at noon. Fishermen in southwest Alaska have been hit hard by a low sockeye return in Chignik. Now, as KDLG's Avery Lill reports, the Board of Fisheries has declared an emergency over the failed run.
Like many Gulf of Alaska communities, far fewer sockeye are returning to the Chignik River than forecasted. Chignik has an early and late run. On July 20th, the two runs combined were just over half the minimum escapement goal for the date. With no harvestable surplus, the Chignik Management Area has not had any commercial fishing openings targeting sockeye. On top of that, some residents say that they've voluntarily given up subsistence fishing to boost escapement. Three groups submitted petitions asking the Board of Fisheries to further restrict South Peninsula fisheries because a significant number of Chignik sockeye swim through those fisheries' waters as they return to the Chignik River to spawn. At an emergency meeting, the Board of Fisheries considered the request. Many South Peninsula fisheries stakeholders strongly opposed the petitions and urged the board to reject them. They argued that Fish and Game already has the authority to address in-season conservation issues and that closing South Peninsula fisheries would hurt regional fishermen. In June and July, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game placed unprecedented restrictions on fishing in the South Unimak and Shumagin Islands. Nick Sagalkin, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Regional Supervisor for Commercial Fisheries in the Westward Region, explained that in mid-June, fishing time in these sections was cut in half. Post-June, the South Peninsula fisheries were initially unrestricted.
When we got to the second period, the escapements were still languishing, and we opted to close the Dolgoy management area so that period opening for the rest of the areas was the same, but we closed the Dolgoys.
Sagalkin said at the meeting that the early sockeye run to the Chignik is very unlikely to meet its escapement goal, and the late run is weak also. However, it was Fish and Game's position that the situation did not constitute an emergency.
Current sockeye salmon escapement is not the worst on record for this date, and while escapement is not adequate to provide directed commercial salmon harvest opportunity in the Chignik management area, The sockeye salmon escapement level does not threaten the long-term sustainability of this stock, and the department does not believe the current Chignik River sockeye salmon escapement level or the harvest of some Chignik origin sockeye salmon in KMA or South Alaska Peninsula represents an emergency.
Nonetheless, the board approved the emergency petitions with a 5-2 vote. Fritz Johnson, a board member from Dillingham, explained why he considers the Chignik situation an emergency.
These fish are, you know, we've heard that this is the lowest return in, you know, if not in recorded history, you know, certainly in a long time with regard to, you know, the fish returning to the Chignik systems. This is an important resource, an important fishery for the communities that participate in it, and I think, you know, given what we're seeing in terms of escapement, that you know, we need to address this today, now, while we're here, and provide what protections we can, you know, to this, you know, to this salmon stock.
Members voted to keep the subsection of the Dolgoy Islands and the Southeastern District mainland area closed through August 8th to protect Chignik sockeye. The Board of Fisheries will further discuss management of Chignik and South Peninsula stocks at a February meeting in Anchorage. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
The Trump administration has reopened a decades-long fight over whether tribes in Alaska can create sovereign areas known as Indian Country. KTOO's Jacob Resnick has more.
When Native American tribes put land into trust with the federal government, it gives it special status. It's not subject to most local and state laws. It's not taxed either. These lands in the lower 48 are commonly known as Indian Country. And for decades, Alaska tribes weren't able to do this. The Department of Interior cited 1971's Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act as the reason. That's the legislation that set up regional Native corporations. Some of Alaska's 200-plus tribal organizations feel left out of that deal.
We did not receive land from the federal government, so we're kind of at a loss to our Aboriginal land claims.
Ivan Ansaluski is the Ninilchik Village Tribe's top official. About a year ago, the Traditional Council got a federal grant to run a public bus service. It serves the Kenai Peninsula.
Basically running from Ninilchik down to Homer and up to Soldotna and Kenai.
The tribe decided to put its bus garage into trust. That would exempt it from local and state taxes and potentially unlock further federal money.
It just simply made a lot of sense. This is a piece of property that would work well and could be well-suited for the land into trust application.
The tribe had reason to be optimistic. After more than a decade of litigation, the Bureau of Indian Affairs began accepting lands into trust applications from Alaska tribes in 2014. 3 years later, the Craig Tribal Association on Prince of Wales Island made history by becoming the first, and so far only, one to be successful. That was in January 2017. President Trump was inaugurated a week later. That meant new appointees running the Department of Interior and Bureau of Indian Affairs. And then, this June, tribes were notified the rule was being withdrawn, pending further review. Anchorage attorney Lloyd Miller helped sue the Department of Interior. That eventually opened the way for Alaska's tribes to put lands into trust. He's disappointed it didn't last.
The White House has made it clear that anything associated with President Obama is to be questioned and presumptively reversed. And the White House has taken that to heart. The agencies have taken it to heart. And this is certainly part of that directive.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs released a list of trust applications from tribes, but did not otherwise respond to requests for comment. It's unclear where Governor Bill Walker's administration stands. It's fallen in line with the previous administration in opposing Alaska tribes from establishing sovereign trust lands. Alaska Native leaders that advise Walker recently met over the federal government's sudden U-turn. Melissa Borton chairs the governor's Tribal Advisory Council. She said the feeling among that group is that when it comes to putting lands into trust, the so-called Alaska exception is unfair.
If tribes feel the need and see the importance in putting that land into trust, then they should have that opportunity just like every other tribe in the nation has. We should not be treated differently than the lower 48 tribes.
In the meantime, Alaska Native tribes have invested thousands of dollars in their applications. Ansaluski in Ninilchik said the outlook is uncertain.
There's a long time that goes into these applications, and it's definitely frustrating to see something potentially hold that up right at the end.
That's not quite the end of the story. This month, the Bureau of Indian Affairs sent a letter to tribal leaders saying it would hold consultations with Alaska tribes and take public comment over the issue. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.